This podcast is not meant to be professional advice of any kind. It is meant to be informative and entertaining. If you make any changes to your life, see the appropriate professional before you do so. Hello, and welcome to SuperAge. My name is David Harry Stewart. I'm the founder of Ageist. At SuperAge, we help you live better and become the best version of yourself. And who doesn't want a SuperAge? Welcome to episode 25 of the SuperAge podcast. Welcome, everyone. Great to have you with us. This show will drop on March the 3rd, 2021. So, gosh, I'm up here in Park City, Utah, and I gotta say, I love the way snowy mountains look in the winter. I just love it. You know, I live in a ski resort, okay? There's like ski lifts 5 minutes from me. Now, I'm relatively accomplished skier. I started skiing when I was really young. But I realized living here that the thing that I love about skiing is just the aesthetics of the mountains in the winter. And that skiing's really fun. It's awesome. But the reason that I did it so much was I was living in big cities and I could go to these mountains in the wintertime. And I'm a photographer, so contrast, right? Like the white mountain, the blue sky, the dark trees. It's just this whole graphic, like wonderful thing. And I just love it. And I find myself, I'll work during the day and then I just, it is kind of dry. You got to like dress for Antarctica here before you leave the house. You got to walk around. But then as soon as you get out there and you see these like mountains and the snow and the trees, and I just feel fantastic. And I'm remembering, there's a book I read called Forest Bathing that's about spending time in nature and about how there's just something, it has an effect on you that sort of it calms everything down, or you can see more clearly. And they talk about even average nature works, and average nature like a park in the city or your backyard or something like that. And I was walking around the other day looking up at the snow-covered mountains that I'm right next to, and I thought, this is not average nature. This is really like epic nature. And I just really love that. I don't know. Some people really like the ocean. I like the ocean too, that's good. But there's something, I think we have different wiring for the sort of places that, not to get too agey, too new agey about this, but like that sort of just resonate with us. And to me, there's just something so inspiring about being in these mountains and in the winter with the snow. So that's what I did this week. This week on the show, we have Dr. Kien Vu. And Dr. Vu is a performance and longevity doctor, and he's just written a book called Thrive State. And Kien's a really fun guy, and he's has a system. He's sort of broken down how to live your best life, essentially, in 7 steps. And we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to talk about some of the more esoteric things that he's involved in and see what he's got to say about that. We're going to get into all that right after a word from our sponsor. Today's show is brought to you by Inside Tracker, and we're doing an amazing giveaway with them, which we're going to tell you about in just a second. What is your inner age? Well, you know your chronological age, but do you know your biological age? That's known as your inner age. Inside Tracker will show you your biological age, as well as an action plan of science-backed recommendations with the goal of improving the quantity and the quality of the years ahead, which is what we all want, right? Founded by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometric data from MIT, Tufts, and Harvard, Inside Tracker is a personalized health and wellness platform like no other. What's their secret? Well, first, Inside Tracker uses its patented algorithm to analyze your body's data and offer you a clearer picture than you've ever had about what's going on inside you. Then Inside Tracker provides you with a concrete, science-backed action plan for living a longer, healthier life and tracks your progress every day, every step of the way. You can find out your inner age too. So we're teaming up with Inside Tracker to provide you with an exclusive giveaway worth over $1,700. You get a couple of Inside Tracker Ultimate tests, You get the Inside Tracker DNA kit. You get Inside Tracker's inner age test. You get a review with a registered dietitian to go over all the recommendations. And guess what? You get a fitness review with me. And we'll get to talk about where your fitness is at for about half an hour. That'll be fun. Just go to weareaegis.com/giveaways/inside tracker to enter. And that's a lot of slashes. So if you can't remember that, the contest is on the front page of the Aegis website. You want to enter today. This is a great platform. It's a great giveaway. It's $1,700. You get a half hour with me. Woo! So it's on the front page of the Aegis website. And let's do this thing, because change is an inside job. Hey, Ken, how are you today?
Doing fantastic. Happy Sunday, David.
Oh, thank you so much. Where are you?
I am just south of Pasadena in the Los Angeles area.
Oh, lovely. Oh, my gosh. I'm in Park City, Utah. I think it's like 15 degrees today. Where is it where you are? Like 75?
Yeah, probably low 70s, but it's beautiful right now. Clear skies, sunny. I can't complain.
Oh, the winters in Los Angeles are the best, I got to tell you. So you have quite a story, Ken. I've listened to your TED Talk. It's awesome. For the people who are listening who haven't listened to your TED Talk, tell me a little bit, how did you get from A to B?
Certainly. Well, I think I'll start maybe 4 years ago. 4 years ago, I was trained as a interventional radiologist. And I was trained in some of the best institutions across the country, UC San Diego, Howard Hughes Medical Institute, the National Institutes of Health, and UCLA. And for those who don't know what interventional radiology is the study of medical imaging. And so radiologists pierce inside the body using advanced sophisticated technology, MRI, CT scans, ultrasounds, to be able to diagnose almost any kind of disease using imaging. What is an interventional radiologist? Well, the interventional radiologist is a minimally invasive surgeon that uses medical imaging to guide their procedures. And so as that doctor, I treated the consequences of numerous chronic diseases, including hypertension, diabetes, cancers. I've just done minimally invasive surgeries for people who needed it. I also found myself at that time, probably at the top of my game. I was growing. I became chief of interventional radiology at my hospital. I was speaking around the world on topics of advanced interventional radiology. But then I also had discovered, at that time, I was overweight, I was diabetic, I was hypertensive, I was on prescription medications, and I started to get the very early signs of the diseases that I was treating. And I told myself, wow, how did I get here and how did I get out of here? And now I have to, take my story back even further to say how I got to that point. Because I think, disease, particularly chronic diseases, as we'll probably talk about more in detail, they stem not because one thing happened to you. It's not like an acute event, like you got into a car accident and you're bleeding. Chronic diseases happen because you're giving your body, you're giving your cells signals, and poor signals for a long period of time. And then your cells start to not function. Your cells and your organs don't function as they should. And this suboptimal functioning of your cells and your organs is actually what leads to the symptoms that is what we call chronic disease. So where does my story start? My story starts back in Vietnam. Post-Vietnam War, 1978, I was born there. And the communist regime that took over Vietnam it really made it very difficult for many, many people to live. They seized all the businesses. My parents were like, there is no way we can raise a child here in this new economy. And so we escaped by boat. They took me, all their worldly possessions, and we boarded a refugee boat filled with 2,000 other refugees. We were crammed like sardines. And in fact, I was I was the only baby that survived, but I nearly died of dysentery on the boat. I spent another 3 months in a Philippine refugee camp, and then we were sponsored to Los Angeles by a Catholic church. And one would think that as a child, you know, who has gone through all that experience, I would grow up feeling very, very grateful that I survived that journey. But that wasn't the case. You know, I lived in a very poor neighborhood in Chinatown, Los Angeles, but I was bused to an affluent area because I was tested as, you know, highly gifted. So I was bused to a more affluent area, more affluent school. And I noticed that, you know, financially, we just weren't as well-to-do as some of the other families. So I grew up with a lot of not enough-itis, I would say, right? Not good enough, not tall enough, not American enough, not white enough, not rich enough, all these things I carried throughout my life. You know, I had an inclination that I wanted to use my voice and do some sort of entertainment or speak or have, you know, have my voice be of impact. You know, I had heroes like Robin Williams, Tony Robbins, Mick Jagger. I love people that were able to command attention and be able to shift how people felt. But when I looked, you know, when I looked at those heroes, none of them looked like me. You know, in fact, the only people who were Asian were, you know, that I saw on TV were like people like Jackie Chan who did martial arts, and I didn't do any martial arts. My mom suggested, well, she didn't really suggest. She's like, Tien, you have three options. You could be a doctor, an MD, or a physician. So I went to medical school, but I still grew up with this not enoughness inside. And I really use that white coat to cover up that not enoughness. And I think if you are not aligned with how you're meant to live in this world, it's very easy to pick up very bad habits, you know? And as an attending physician who went to medical school, they never really stressed how to be healthy. You know, my sleep was off. I ate poor food in the hospital and I was constantly stressed at work. That's how I became who I became. And there's a very famous quote by the Dalai Lama who said, what he found most interesting about humanity. And he answered, man, because he would sacrifice his health in order to make money and then sacrifice his money to recuperate his health. And I feel so many people these days are not conscious that they can be in full control of their health, but because we're chasing things outside of ourselves, maybe be also from a poor wound of not being enough or whatever that might be, if they're not truly aligned to who they're authentically meant to be, it's easy to pick up bad habits and end up with chronic disease like myself. But here's the good news. You know, I did have a medical background being trained, you know, the conventional ways of how to treat disease, but I said there was a better way. And that's when I really dove into alternative type of education, which included nutrition, which included personal development, which included anti-aging and regenerative medicine. And in a matter of 4 to 6 months, I reversed all my chronic conditions, all prescription medications, and now stronger, fitter, faster, and happier than I've ever been. So that's basically my story in a nutshell.
And I want to just put some numbers on this. So
yeah.
At what age was the nadir of your physicality?
I would say I was maybe about 37, 38 years old.
Right on. Uh-huh. And how much did you weigh?
I weighed almost at my peak 190 pounds, and I'm only 5'6". So that puts me, you know, I think my BMI was pretty close to, you know, whatever it was, like 29 or 30 or something like that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
mine is still pretty high now. And so I want people to know that if you're carrying a lot of muscle mass, and I've got a lot more muscle mass than I did before, your BMI will be higher. So it's a rough gauge for the average person. But if you do work out and you have a lot of lean muscle, your BMI will be a little bit higher.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just curious, you were on blood pressure meds. What sort of meds were you on?
Yeah, so I was on lisinopril. I remember taking that. I went from 5 to 10 to 20 milligrams of lisinopril. I was on that. I was on metformin as well. And, you know, I was on that for about a year and a half. And then I said, these numbers are just not looking very good. And I don't want to resign the rest of my life, you know, taking medications to fix the symptoms that I was having, you know, and I knew that there was a better way. And there is.
38, 39 to be, that's pretty early.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. That's not good. The future is not bright.
Yeah. For somebody who, and unfortunately, this is where the chronic disease epidemic is going in America. Chronic disease is coming sooner, and more and more people have chronic disease. The statistics are 1 in 2 American has a chronic disease, and 1 in 4 actually have multiple chronic diseases. So that's a huge statistic. Chronic disease is actually, one of the most major epidemics we have here in America. And because the world is adopting Western lifestyles, the world is starting to get, these numbers as well.
So your chronic disease condition sounds really a result of your behaviors.
Yeah. And I would say, a majority, 95% of most chronic diseases have lifestyle components to them that actually drive them. And when we start talking about my book a little bit, we'll talk about what the drivers are and what actually drives chronic disease. I mean, genetically, we can be prone to be obese or to have diabetes and things like that. We might have genes that predispose us to do that. But what turns on these genes are actually the way we live our life. And we can get into that when we talk about epigenetics in my book in a little bit.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the solution. So you're in bad shape. You're 39 years old. You have a come to Jesus moment. This has got to stop. Yeah. What do you do?
Well, it was just to take a break and say, I can't be doing what I'm currently doing, and understanding that it is what I'm currently doing that is leading to that result. And for me, it was not saying that I am a diabetic or I am a hypertensive and this thing runs in my family and this is my course and this is my fate. So it was understanding that initially that gave me some kind of empowerment. Like, this is something I was doing. And in fact, this is what I actually told myself. I told myself that I chose diabetes. I chose hypertension by the choices that I had made in life. And that to me was very empowering, because if I could choose those symptoms, then I could choose a way out of it. So for me, initially it was tackling on just the physical aspects of health, which is sleep, nutrition, and exercise. I used to, come into the hospital and down coffee with tons of international delight, and each one of those pumps was, several grams of sugar. So I had tons of those every day. And then in order to stay up, because I was constantly tired, I would be drinking Monster energy drinks, which was also loaded with sugar, and I feel like, I needed those things to stay awake, to care for patients, but I wasn't really, really caring for my own body. And it was understanding that.
Did you test your cortisol then?
No, I did not test my cortisol then.
Oh, I would have loved to see your cortisol levels.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry. Let's go on.
No, certainly. But it was just really understanding, those things first. And I said, okay, let's get rid of the sugar. Let's get rid of the high glycemic foods and let's just start to sleep better and just start moving a little bit more. And honestly, once I just made those little tiny shifts, I actually started to notice huge, huge returns very, very quickly. I started to notice, at that time, once my hemoglobin A1C was above 7, I said, okay, I'm going to check this every month and make sure that things are going in the right direction, which they were. And then with all the additional work that I've done and studying epigenetics and what really drives our cellular behavior, I knew that there were more than just the physical things. There are the way we feel, how much stress we're under, what is our relationships like? Are they bringing on lots of stress and negative feelings? And finally, there's a lot of research that demonstrates that when we feel connected, to our community, when we feel connected to a bigger sense of purpose, there's actually tangible changes in our DNA that actually make us live longer. You're familiar, David, I'm sure, with telomeres, and those people that have a deep sense of purpose actually maintain their telomeres better than people who don't. So that's a pretty amazing thing. It's almost kind of like our creator has designed us to live longer when we're really serving ourselves and living our purpose and truth.
I think that's right. I mean, I love to bring up the example of Jimmy Carter, who seems, I don't know what it's going to take for him to die. I loved him. Like he's almost 100 now and he's had all brain cancer and he's just, but it's that, you know, I was talking to a brain scientist once, and then if we have this strong sense of purpose of things that we have to do, even though we can have like really serious problems with our brains, our brains will sort of repurpose and they'll become neurogenerative to keep you going
That's a great really. Point. There's a concept called neuroplasticity.
Yes.
And we once thought that the neurons didn't grow. And you know, you were born with the amount of neurons that you had and you couldn't grow more. But that is actually absolutely not true. There is new science demonstrating neuroplasticity, which means that neurons could start to change and you could actually start to form new networks as you start to ask your brain to do different things. So as we release emotional traumas, as we take on new tasks, and as we are more active in using our brain, we're able to build more of these neurons and save us from getting neurodegenerative disorders down the road.
Absolutely. We often use this word epigenetics.
Yes.
And so I have an idea about what it means, but you have a better idea. Why don't you explain to everybody what are epigenetics?
So epigenetics is actually a science that has been very exciting because it brings the power back of our health to us and not our genes. Epigenetics, epi means above, you know, so the epidermis is a layer of skin, you know, on the highest. So it means above genetics, genes. So it means above the genes. And what does above the genes means? Well, it means that the control and the behavior of a cell or the performance of a cell, because I am in the longevity and performance space, that the performance of a cell is dictated by our genes, yes, but our genes actually don't control, don't actually have the last say, or actually the first say is how to drive our cells. It's actually how these genes are turned on and turned off. And the genes themselves don't actually do that. The genes are actually constantly listening to the environment of the cell, all right? And it's these different energetic cues that talks to our genes, that turns on certain genes, turns off certain genes, and that actually drives cellular behavior as well as cellular longevity. So it is these external factors, epi, that are above the genes that actually control how they behave. And so here's the good news. The good news is that those factors are things that you and I can both control by our choices. And in my book, Thrive State, I actually talk about the seven major things. You know, I worked with an epigeneticist at UCLA, one of my colleagues, Stephen Cole, to come up with this. But these are all things that you and I can control, and they are sleep, nutrition, movement, stress or emotional mastery. Then there are things like relationship, our thoughts and mindset, and finally, purpose. And if you can master each one of these seven things, then you're basically giving an energetic environment around your genes for your cells to perform optimally, to have longevity, and for us to be at our very, very best. That's the empowering news. And that's what really my book, Thrive State, is all about.
That's fantastic. I downloaded your book the other day and I went through it. It's great. It's really, I love the whole 360 approach to things.
Yeah.
Like it's not just what you're eating. It's not just what you're exercising. It's all these other factors that are, you know, affecting the expression of your genes.
Yes. And it's, again, it's just not the physical anymore. We don't normally think about all these, you know, additional things, but we were created as humans to be social beings, to serve others. And because the thing is, we actually mimic, before we were human beings, we were unicellular life. And if we think of how life evolved, it's one cell working with another cell. Okay, they jive and then they form an organ. And then these organs kind of like work together. They jive, they form systems, and then they form who we are. So in the very elemental way of thinking, we just mirror what we were as cells. Each cell has its own purpose, but it is meant to use that purpose along with the purposes of the other cells to form this beautiful multi-organism. And that's who we are as human beings. I mean, we each have our own purpose, but we're meant to also flourish and contribute to the collective.
That's really beautiful. I've never heard that put that way.
Oh yeah, well, check this out also. You know, what happens if a cell, if a heart cell decides, I don't wanna be a heart cell anymore. I don't wanna live my purpose. In fact, I wanna be a kidney cell. First of all, a heart cell needs to be at its best to pump blood throughout the body. But if it decides it's not going to do that, then the rest of the body is not going to get that blood flow. You're going to now get some kind of chronic disease because the rest of the cells in the body aren't going to get the nutrients from that blood flow. But if that's a cell not functioning at its best or at its purpose. But if a cell wants to be something else, if a cell does not want to contribute to the rest of the body and just live by itself, what is that called? That is a cancer cell, David. So we ourselves, if we just live for ourselves and not serve what we're meant to serve, which is just us for the rest of the world, we become the cancer to humanity.
Wow. Okay. That's great. I mean, it's not good. Okay. Sorry. I love the visual on that. So you're a doctor. You're practicing in Los Angeles. Tell me about what you're doing now. What's your work as a physician?
So I'm sort of actually in transition. I am still an interventional radiologist. I teach over at UCLA residents as to how to do some of these procedures because, you know, conventional medicine is still pretty good for, you know, very acute conditions. There are people that come in to the hospital and they're about to lose their leg because they cannot, they can't get blood there. And But why does that happen? That's happened because of years living in a low bioenergetic state, not really being aware of their choices, leading to their cells not given the right signals to perform at their very best. That's what leads to the disease, and that ultimately leads to the plaque in their legs. They could start to reverse and start living differently, but sometimes when you get to the point where you've got so little blood flow to the foot might fall off otherwise. And I do procedures where I go into an artery and start to open things up so that people don't lose their legs. And I think it's a great way to, it's a great thing to be able to do, but why did I start to transition to do more longevity and performance medicine? Well, one, I recovered from chronic disease. And not only did I recover, I am now better and better able to serve my purpose for other people. And here's the other thing. I think if I could spread the message that we are ultimately in control of our cellular performance and longevity, then people could start waking up early years down the line so that they don't have to, you know, get to the point where they ever lose their leg. I want people to, you know, end up not having to go to the hospital because they are empowered themselves not to be able to, pick up these conditions that later on lead to a point where they need some kind of surgery from me. In fact, I'm trying to fire the surgeon aspect of myself by empowering people to take back control of their health. And so the other part of my practice now is I work with male CEOs, clients, a lot of celebrities in the LA area on longevity and performance. And it's really dialing down those lifestyle factors, those seven factors in their life, and really getting them to adopt a habit of living on purpose and a habit of actually creating an energetic state that allows their cells to flourish.
There's a lot of, in the book, a lot of the book is taken up with this idea of sugar really high glycemic food. And that's something, it's a real bugbear with me. So explain to everyone, say like, I haven't eaten anything for a few hours and I go down to 7-Eleven and I have a big gulp of some god-awful soda. What happens to me?
Well, our bodies are able to use energy from lots of different sources. We could use it from glucose or sugar. We could also use it from fat, but we're probably not, you know, designed to use that energy from sugar all the time, which is what's currently in a lot of foods, you know, coming from a, you know, a convenience store or processed foods. What happens now is if you take the sugar gets absorbed into your bloodstream, and what your body does at that time to get rid of the sugar out of the bloodstream is your pancreas secretes a hormone called insulin. And insulin will help bring the sugar into the cells. And then your cells at that point will start to either use it as energy. But if you have so much sugar around, it then starts to store it as fat. So here's the other thing that the sugar causes. It also causes your microbiome to, and that's basically all the microbes in your gut. It causes your microbiome to be in disarray. And you're actually feeding microbiomes that like that stuff. So you start to crave more of that. Which has issues on its own. But what high sugar levels also do is it starts to, attach to proteins that are in your bloodstream in a process called glycation. And these glycation products are actually very, very harmful to your body and causes oxidation and things like that. And then that could lead to mitochondrial dysfunction. So sugar causes fat, causes these oxidation products, it wrecks your microbiome, and really, really the source of metabolic syndrome, diabetes, and, you know, the source of a lot of chronic disease that we have in the country.
Alzheimer's, cancer, yeah. Heart disease.
Yep.
On and on. Bad, bad, bad. I tell people there's one thing you would just, if you don't do anything else, just lower the glycemic load.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I completely agree. That's where I was. And you know, that's how I became a diabetic, and actually just being a little bit more mindful of that, I was able to reverse it very quickly. So for people who are type 2 diabetics, or if you have insulin resistance, just be a little bit more mindful. I'm pretty sure you can either reduce the effect it has on your body, or potentially even reverse it altogether.
And could you just quickly explain to someone, what is metabolic syndrome?
So metabolic syndrome, the medical terminology for metabolic syndrome is actually one, your BMI, and also if you've got high triglycerides.
I found this on the web.
Oh, sorry, Siri's trying
that's
to answer
really
that
funny.
Question. also, your HDL levels are low, you have increased blood sugar, and then you also have elevated blood fasting. Now, so these are all these clinical parameters that make up what's called metabolic syndrome. And the way I like to almost kind of explain it through my book is your cells are just not functioning normally. And these are the symptoms that's coming out. And usually this is a symptom of a dysfunction of both your endocrine system, as well as your vascular system, as well as your metabolic syndrome. So basically, again, you know, you've got this huge, usually, you know, the culprit here again is sugar. You have this huge glycemic load, and all the sugar wrecks basically functions in all these different systems in your body, causing you to have the metabolic syndrome. And so many Americans actually have this right now.
And the onset of a whole range of really nasty chronic diseases.
Exactly.
You really don't want. So speaking on the happy topic of disease, I think in your book Thrive State, you talk about the main causes of mortality.
Yeah.
So as an American today, what's going to kill me? Assuming I'm an average in the, you know, pool of Americans.
Right. So the major ones would be heart disease, cancer, stroke. So heart disease and stroke, those are both basically vascular diseases, right? Then you have neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, dementia, and then you'll have, you know, things that are like chronic diseases in your kidney and your lungs. Most of these diseases could be staved off if you, again, work on your bioenergetic state, work on those seven things I talk about. Because again, if your cells are functioning optimally and functioning together optimally, then you're not going to get basically, you know, malfunctions in the systems in your body that causes chronic disease. Other leading causes of death, unfortunately, are accidents. And that's not something, you know, we can necessarily control. However, one could say that, you know, a lot of accidents happen because maybe you're not sleeping well, or you might be, you know, you might be compromised otherwise. And therefore, you know, you could save yourself from having an accident if you were functioning optimally.
I think that people oftentimes make the mistake of thinking that health span, lifespan is like you need to be wealthy to have that. But yeah, what you're talking about here is not that at all. I'm not hearing you talk about any sort of, you know, really expensive interventions or anything.
Correct. Correct. If you look at the longest people living in the world, if we look at these blue zone countries, Okinawa, Japan, we're talking about Costa Rica, we're talking about Sardinia in Greece. If we're talking about these countries, you know, we're not talking about the millionaires of those countries that are living a long time. No, they're just very average folk. And if you look at, you know, what drives longevity and good health, it's those seven factors that I talk about that make up our bioenergetic state. And the good news is all those things are completely free. I think it's very nice, you know, in the world of biohacking and all of these additional technologies that we do have. I think that's great. I think they're fun toys to play with. However, if we just focus on the basics, when we just focus on these seven things, not very expensive at all.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, I think it was Craig Cooper would talk to me about the big rock theory, big rocks versus small rocks. Mm-hmm. So if you got a pail, the best thing to do is you fill it with the big rocks first. And then if you got a little room left, you can put in the little rocks. And the big rocks are what you're talking about. That's the really main deal.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. So I want to go into some of the maybe smaller rocks.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Let's talk
You know, I was asking you about your medical practice.
Yeah.
And you said you do something called functional medicine testing. What does that mean?
Well, so there's a lot of additional tests that maybe a conventional medical doctor would not test for. So in my clinic, one of the first things that I do is one, see where somebody is with their bioenergetic state. And that's really just an inventory of the seven things that I talk about in my book, you know, because that's going to drive a lot of those things. In fact, if you have labs that are off, it's likely that, you know, you have not mastered those seven things in your life. So it's really taking a deep dive there. And I would venture to say that, you know, if people pick up my book and they work on these seven things, it's very unlikely that you'll have any symptoms. But if you do, that's where a doctor like myself that does functional medicine testing can figure out. Because if you're still symptomatic, say you've got some brain fog or sexual dysfunction or insulin resistance or some symptom, there might be some additional causes that the root causes of these seven things that, you know, I mentioned in my book has not covered. What might they be? They could be some low-grade infections, for example. So testing for maybe Lyme disease and things like that. That's a functional medicine test. Another one would be potential toxins that you might be exposed to. That could be heavy metals. That could be pesticides. It could be things like that. So testing your body for those things would be something else. A lot of symptoms may also be due to certain nutrient deficiencies that we have. So, you know, a functional medicine doctor like myself or a longevity doctor like myself could also test for micronutrient deficiencies to see if that might be the cause of symptoms. So there are all these additional type of tests that that, you know, the world of functional medicine does. And they would do that on top of a lot of basic lab tests that a conventional doctor does. And that would give you big, big clues that if it's not the lifestyle, what else is happening that, you know, that you were exposed to in the past, whether it be an infection, whether it be a toxin, or whether it be some kind of deficiency. And we can use that to test for that. And then there are additional things like, you know, genetic testing to see why, for example, homocysteine levels in your body is a marker of vascular inflammation. and some people's homocysteine levels are high, and it could be, you know, that you are missing the function of an enzyme is not functioning very well. And there's a gene called the MTHFR gene that we test for to see if you have that mutation. So there's things that we do to test for that. So that is really the array of functional medicine tests. And oh, and another functional medicine test that's very big for people that have symptoms is actually testing the gut, seeing if there's some dysbiosis, meaning, you know, looking at your microbiome to see if it's a healthy microbiome, or is your microbiome, you know, susceptible to something that's called leaky gut, which might, you know, also make you susceptible for getting other chronic disease. So that's the array of functional medicine testing that we do in my clinic and functional medicine doctors across the country.
I'm curious about the gut testing. How does that happen? How do you do that?
Yeah. So you will get a, you can do it, you know, at the comfort of your own home. and if somebody is suspicious for parasites, you do more than one test. You basically just get a stool sample and you'll get three stool samples. Otherwise you can just do it, you know, in a day. You send off a stool sample, you know, you basically put it in a packet and you send it off. And then, you know, what comes back to you is a lot of information. It will tell you information about the different microorganisms that are in your gut. It will tell you markers in your gut that may suggest, do you have a leaky gut or not? And there are some substrates that are in your gut that say, oh, okay, you've got, you know, good digestive enzymes that are there that are helping you break down food. So you get a lot, you know, quite a bit of comprehensive information off a stool sample.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that the gut and the microbiome is something that's it's really important. It has a huge effect on the brain and
yes,
just all kinds of things that I you wouldn't think, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So let's talk about hormone optimization. And I know that a lot of your patients are men.
Yep.
So what does that look like? What are you looking for with hormones?
All right, I'm gonna take Siri away from my my wrist. So hormone optimization, we have lab ranges of what is considered what might be considered healthy aging, but there is a alternate. Well, you know, and that's what we learned in medical school. You know, as we age, you know, certain hormones will decrease, and that is considered normal for aging. However, there's a lot of science, you know, in the last, you know, several decades that promote that with certain hormones, it is better to be optimized or to have the levels that we had when we were younger so that they could support our body functioning optimally. And, you know, for men, the major hormone there would be, you know, testosterone. And it's suggested that as, you know, if we could replace those levels early, we actually save ourselves from prematurely getting, you know, chronic disease. So, you know, testosterone is great for increasing our libido. It is great for maintaining muscle mass, you know, for protecting against sarcopenia, for maintaining bone density, and also reduces our risk of getting chronic diseases like Alzheimer's, like insulin resistance, and diabetes. And it's also good for your heart function. So what does optimization look like? Well, if somebody comes into my clinic and say, doc, I've got some of these symptoms, which might be low energy, brain fog, like I mentioned, fatigue, sexual dysfunction, then we would take a look at their testosterone. And we could say, all right, well, do you want to optimize? Do you want to bring it to the levels you had when you were in your 20s? Some people want to do that and other people want to do that naturally. And honestly, it's a choice for people to either want to optimize or not. You know, I've been optimizing now for a couple of years and I feel great on it. And a lot of my clients who are on it feels like, you know, they have, you know, I think the words that I usually get is, I feel like I've got my edge back.
Interesting. And what are the levels that you're looking at? And you're measuring free testosterone?
Actually, so the free testosterone is generally unreliable when you take it all the lab tests. So the best way to do that is actually to do the total testosterone and also measure something called the sex hormone binding globulin, or SHBG, as well as the albumin, because free testosterone, well, how you calculate a free testosterone is actually a combination of your free testosterone, how much of the testosterone is actually bound to albumin, how much of the testosterone is bound to SHBG, and that gives you the total testosterone. So the best way to calculate free testosterone is taking your total testosterone, knowing the numbers of albumin and SHBG, and there's a calculator for you to calculate your free. So you can also get the free testosterone off a lab. However, the reliability of that is not as good as actually calculating it yourself. So we're looking probably at a total testosterone range anywhere from like maybe 800 to 1200, the total testosterone range. And that's typically somebody who has a normal SHBG. And the free testosterone calculated, we want probably between 20 to 25. And again, we're looking at people who have symptoms. If you're feeling great and you feel like you've got, you know, good energy, good sex drive, you've got good muscle mass and you're just feeling great and your levels are slightly lower than normal, I don't treat somebody with that. If you're symptomatic and your levels look like they're low and you desire to optimize that, then there are ways to optimize that. Your next question might be, well, how do people optimize their testosterone? Well, for that hormone alone, there are different ways people can do it. You can either take testosterone shots, which you inject intramuscularly, and you can take that shot anywhere from 1 to 3 times a week. Some people do pellets, which they insert, basically underneath the skin, and they last anywhere from 3 to 6 months. And then another way would be testosterone creams, which they can apply on their arms. My preference is shots, because they are most accurate, and you can dose them the easiest. When you put them on your arms, if you happen to touch your partner with it, you can get they can pick up the testosterone as well. The pellets, some people like it because you don't have to take shots all the time, but sometimes they're unreliable in terms of the levels that are actually being produced from the pellets. So my preference is shots.
And are people giving themselves their own shots?
Yeah, you could. It's very easy to do. My clients are trained to inject themselves, but for people who are a little squeamish, they can actually go into a clinic and have a nurse do it as well.
Yeah, I'm going to get this wrong, so you can correct me. But yeah, I think it's something like your levels decrease 2 or 3% a year after some age.
Yeah, so I would probably say that after the age of 30, it probably decreases about 1% a year. 2 to 3% would be quite a bit. But you're right in that we are seeing faster declines with testosterone. Why? Because of the bioenergetic state. Because people are just not conscious of how they live their life, and they're eating the junk, they're not sleeping well, and everything else I mentioned, all that will actually decrease your sex hormones. So if you work on those 7 things alone, that's really the lifestyle to kind of maintain optimal hormone levels. And so I have people who aren't optimized, but they live life so cleanly that their rate of decline is negligible.
And are there negative health consequences to testosterone optimization? I mean, it's not HGH.
No. Yeah. Well, if there's a if there's a history of prostate cancer or whatnot, we don't recommend it. But and if somebody takes it too much, well, you think of, synthetic testosterone, there's a lot of problems with synthetic testosterone. And people who take it with like the bodybuilder levels, where they jack it up really, really high, well, you can get certainly, some skin changes with that. You can get a lot of aggression. So I do recommend you work with somebody who's been trained to give you testosterone. But the testosterone you should be getting is something called bioidentical testosterone, which means it's the exact same molecule that you make in your body.
Right. And it's really similar to HRT in women, which seems to me to be far more advanced and you know, people, I guess there's still a little controversy with it, but that doesn't seem to be much anymore.
No, I think, you know, again, our testosterone, or sorry, our hormone levels are so important in terms of how we feel. I mean, I think in women, there's a lot more advocacy, certainly like Suzanne Summers is a great proponent of it. And again, just like in men, if you are going to replace them, it's very important to get them replaced with bioidentical components and not synthetic components.
Right on. You mentioned peptides.
Yes.
And I heard some, I was in touch with some esoteric folks in Russia, ex-KGB people who were very involved. There's a clinic in St. Petersburg where they're all about peptides.
Yeah.
What are you doing with peptides?
So peptides is a very, very hot topic in the anti-aging field. So what are they? So we basically have proteins that run the gamut of biological functions in our body. So proteins are basically the building blocks of our body, but they also, you know, run all the functions in our body. Now, what is a peptide? A peptide is just a small fragment of a protein that basically mimic, you know, a protein that we already actually have in our body. So insulin, for example, is a peptide. So, you know, in people that, you know, are type 1 diabetics that can produce their own insulin, exogenous insulin is actually a peptide given to augment the function of insulin. But we've got basically proteins for all sorts of functions in our body. And as we age, some of that function decreases over time. And the idea of peptides are there are now these fragments that are mimicking the exact same fragment that you actually already have in your body. So your body actually already has receptors for these things. And you could actually take them. And there's different ways of taking them. You could either inject them. Some peptides you can take orally, not all of them. And some you could actually take intranasally. But they will augment different type of systems in your body. So what are, you know, some of the, you know, major peptides people use? Well, there are peptides that help boost cognitive function. You know, the two peptides, Celanc and C-Max, are actually, you know, produced in Russia initially as a nootropic. And some are, you know, and provide some sort of, you know, anxiety relief. So there are nootropic peptides. There are also peptides. There's a peptide called bremelanotide or PT-141. And one of the peptides I actually prescribe quite frequently, but it's a peptide that actually, you know, helps produce an erection and helps produce longer and more sustained erection in men that, you know, experience sexual dysfunction. It also works when, you know, drugs like Viagra and Cialis don't work. And they actually work in the central nervous system. So that's a very popular peptide for certain reasons. There are peptides that actually help your pituitary produce more of your own growth hormone. So as we age, another thing that leads to aging is a decrease in the growth hormone that we're having. And again, lifestyle plays a big, big factor. If you're not sleeping well, you're not eating well, you're not producing growth hormone. But as we also age, we notice decreases in growth hormones as well. So there's peptides. Some of them I'll name somorolin, ipamorolin, CJC-1295. They actually help your own pituitary produce a little more growth hormone. And then there are several other functions that are out there. There are peptides called thymosin alpha that actually help modulate the immune system. In fact, some of my clients this year had, were dealing with some COVID things, and thymosin alpha is used to actually support that, not to cure it, but actually support the immune system, help rev up the immune system. So those are what peptides are.
Wow. Okay. So that's more than I thank you. So I want to just sort of quickly go through some of these things that some people are doing for longevity, health span.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I interviewed Nir Barzali mm-hmm. a couple of months ago about metformin.
Yeah.
What's your thought on metformin?
Well, you know, so metformin got a lot of additional press recently, you know, with David Sinclair's book.
Sure.
out there, and I know he takes it, and it you know, helps increases the AMK pathway. A lot of people feel like it's great for longevity, but there are some recent studies suggesting that metformin actually decreases the effect of exercise. So there is some controversy. So the way I use metformin now is if you do have a history of insulin resistance, or you know, you might have it run in your family, you may want to take it. If you're otherwise, you know, really good in range, you may decide, okay, that might be something you don't need to do. But certainly if you exercise a lot, and you're not, you know, insulin resistant by any means, I would not take metformin on the day you exercise.
Right. That's, I mean, I took metformin for a while. Yeah. I was taking 1,000 milligrams a day. Yeah. Metformin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I take it too. I mean, I have my history, so I take it.
I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist, yeah. But from what I've read, I think if you're doing high intensity exercise,
yeah,
it pretty much does the same, takes care of the same pathways as the metformin. Right. If you're, you know, if you're more sedentary, maybe a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay. The NAD story. Where do you stand on that?
I'm a proponent of it. So NAD. I'm pretty sure your audience knows about NAD.
Probably. I mean, they know there's a lot of different ways
of taking it. Sure.
Taking it.
Yeah. So NAD is a molecule that's necessary basically to drive ATP synthesis in our body. And it also is a substrate that turns on a set of genes called sirtuins in our body that are important for DNA repair. So NAD is actually, you know, super helpful. I've seen people who have, you know, had addictions in the past, who've gotten NAD IVs, who are able to have great results from them. It's a great molecule to be able to help reset the body. And because it's a substrate for ATP, which is involved in basically every single biological process, you know, it's important to keep those levels, up, to function optimally. So I feel great about that. A good friend of mine, Craig Conover, over at Conover Wellness. Actually, I'm not quite sure if I have to, you know, I could let him know what they're working on, but you know, he's a big fan of NAD as well. Let's just say that. I'm a proponent of it. I know there are a lot of different substrates that you could take, whether it be nicotinamide riboside or NMN. I personally will do IV infusions every couple of months.
Of NAD plus directly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. Let's move on to the next controversial subject. CBD. Where do you stand on that?
You know, CBD. So I do recognize that there are a lot of symptoms that are associated in our bodies that you know, are related and are exacerbated by stress. And I do find that if you have those type of symptoms, whether it be a joint ache, a pain, a headache, or anything like that, where it is exacerbated by stress, I find that those people do actually find some relief with CBD. You know, if their symptoms are exacerbated by stress, CBD seems to have a calming effect on the body to be able to relieve pain, be able to relieve all these other symptoms. So I say, you know, for stress-related type of symptoms where, again, if it's worsened by stress, I think it's worth maybe a try.
And you're talking about oral or topical?
Both. Uh-huh. Both. So, you know, go ahead and rub it on areas that are painful, but, you know, doing the oral, you know, ones that are just sublingual would also be beneficial.
Yeah, it seems it's an interesting, I had... Martin, I forget Martin's last name on. Martin was a CBD expert because I wanted to find somebody who like could really speak with authority on the whole cannabinoid system. Yeah. And there isn't anybody. it's a funny thing. Like there's like not a lot of studies out there. Yeah. But let's go. So I want to talk a little bit about exercise. So the way that I set it up here, and I'm probably doing it wrong. You can correct me. But I sort of like prioritize strength. So sarcopenia because of the, you know, the hormone effects of that. And then of course, the next one down is mobility, pliability. So I got to be able to move around well. And then we get into endurance. What are your thoughts on that?
I love the way you section it off, because some people look at exercise and say, okay, as long as I'm moving. And here's the other thing though, but if you are just normally sedentary, any movement will be pretty good. So just move.
Absolutely.
All right. But I love how you break it all down, because those components are very, very important. Strength and resistance training, I agree with you, is probably one of the best things that we can do for longevity, because sarcopenia, or the loss of lean muscle mass, is strongly correlated with early death. So having muscle mass is very, very important. You broke it down next to kind of, you know, I think you said mobility.
Mobility, pliability.
Yeah, great. Yeah. You know that falls in the category of functional movement. And that's really important too, because you need to be able to get yourself off, you know, the floor when you're standing up, and working on that is very important. So just building big muscles alone without the ability of being able to move normally or functional movement, that is not going to work in your favor. So a great resource for that would be, I believe it's functional movement. Yeah, I think it's functionalmovement.com or functionalexercises.com, where, you know, people could just take exercises. A lot of them are squats or getting up from the floor and things like that, because you need that. You know, one of the major risk factors for people who are aging is, you know, falls and you know, uncoordination. And once they fall, their body has to, you know, expend a lot of energy trying to heal from that, which is why a lot of people, you know, they don't die actually from the actual broken bone from a fall. They die because you're expending so much energy trying to fix that bone. And that leads people to have blood clots and things like that. And then the last thing you mentioned is endurance or high intensity. I like including that in there, because I almost feel like our bodies as human beings were meant to be able to have a little bit of juice to run away from the saber-toothed tiger. So I like to incorporate, you know, a once a week sprint or some occasional high intensity interval training into my training as well.
Lastly, my favorite subject, recovery. What are the, you know, if you're prescribing, say, strength training, endurance training, and some of these other things, what are you telling people about recovery intervals? Like, meaning after you stress a muscle, when are they allowed to stress it again? How do you make that judgment?
Yeah, so I tell people this, you know, for the high, if you're doing a lot of high intensity interval training, you know, for the average person, I'm definitely having them, you know, not do two HIIT trainings in a row. You need at least 24 hours to recover. Now, as we age, that time period is going to lengthen a little bit.
That and sucks. So, I can tell you about that.
Yeah. So, and that's just something to be wary of. Sometimes some amino acids, you know, in some IVs or just taking some amino acids could help with recovery. But, you know, I would probably just mention, you know, listen to your body and not push it, because there are people who just push it, you know, a little too much, and that causes a lot of stress.
Yeah, you're gonna get other things are gonna break down.
Yeah,
and it's one of the hardest things I find about getting older is I have to modulate that. Like I can't, I just need longer recovery. So I'll do HIIT training maybe twice a week. If I haven't been in a gym in, I don't know, do gyms still exist anymore?
It's still around. I mean, I live in California. You see a lot of people working out outside.
Oh, so good. Yeah.
You've turned parking lots into gyms.
You know, if I do something like I love the deadlift, but the deadlift is just so impactful. Mm-hmm. And so I'll do five heavy lifts a week. That's it. I just pick the thing up five times. And then because there's too much stress and I just need to recover on that.
Yeah.
So I noticed you have an iWatch, which is very communicative with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what are you tracking? There's a lot of tracking devices on that. What are you tracking?
Yeah. So just with the watch, I am tracking, you know, certainly my heart rate. I have an Oura ring that I just broke, so I'm not wearing that. But normally also I like to track with my Oura ring how much deep sleep I'm getting, how much REM sleep I'm getting. And I track trends. I don't really track the actual numbers because it's off a little bit, but you just want to track trends. So, I'm tracking my heart rate, I'm tracking my steps, and I'm also tracking my sleep.
Right on.
And right now I'm actually don't have one on, but occasionally I'll also wear a continuous glucose monitor.
Oh yes. Because, I want one of those.
Oh yeah. 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 There's lots that are out there. And again, I don't think, there are some that are a little more reliable than others. So I use that in conjunction with a finger stick glucose just to calibrate it. And I use the monitor just to kind of, again, go for the trends, because I realize that the CGMs are sometimes off, anywhere from 10, 20, 30 points sometimes off the finger stick glucose. So again, don't be freaked out if you see a reading that looks too high. Also, I would just double check with a finger stick glucose. Maybe you're going to use it.
One of the tracking, I have a Whoop, which is, similar thing.
How do you like it? Yeah.
It's like having a pet. Mm-hmm. You develop a relationship with the thing. Mm-hmm. And, I think the good points, I don't think it's entirely accurate. I think that it gets a little nuts sometimes. It doesn't make any sense. But I think for, as you said, sort of trend tracking, they're very big on HRV, which is heart rate variability. Mm-hmm. Talking about, if that falls precipitously, you need to chill out for a while. I think that's useful. Not great. My doctor here in Park City works with the Olympic team. I've asked him about HRV. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, helpful, but it's not the full answer. What I do like is the sleep efficiency. So I know that for me to sleep, I need about 8 hours of sleep, but that doesn't mean laying in bed for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. That's because my sleep efficiency is not 100%. Mm-hmm. So I need to be in the bed simulating some kind of sleep for, like 8.5, 9 hours in order to actually sleep 8. And that was sort of a revelation. Mm. Maybe I'm a bad sleeper. I don't know. You could give me some, maybe just need more CBD. this is wonderful. Tell me, it's a great book. Tell me, where do we get your book?
Go to thrivestatebook.com. And if you order, a bundle of books, there's actually some bonuses that you can get along with it. So I would recommend people pre-order the book at thrivestatebook.com.
Amazing. I love how you simplified it. They're just 7 factors.
Yeah.
Like, get those covered off, and we don't quite know how much longer you're going to live, but it's going to be better. It's going to work out better.
Yeah. Yeah. You're basically, nobody wants to give any absolutes, but we always want to give ourselves the best chance we have. And that's what working on these 7 factors will do. It will give you the best chance you have for living a very full, complete life.
That's fantastic. Ken, thank you so much for being with us today. That was super informative.
Well, thank you for having me.
That was great. I'm really glad we had Ken on the show. Wow, what a life story he's had. Just amazing. And, he's a fairly young guy at this point still. Everybody, have you left a comment for us? We would just love that. Wherever you listen to this, on iTunes or Google or Sketcher, wherever you're at, leave us a comment, leave us a rating, hopefully a good one. And if you want to contact me directly, you have any comments on the show, you want questions for Ken, hit me up directly, david@superage.com, and I answer all of your questions directly and personally. And hey, we've got daylight savings time coming to an end, yay, on March 14th, which means it's going to be lighter at night, which means after work, I get to go for a walk, and I look up at my mountains, and it's daylight, which is awesome. And everybody, don't forget to enter that Inside Tracker giveaway. You really want to be part of that. Everyone, have a wonderful week, and we'll be back next week with another awesome guest. Take care now. Bye.